We are in the 11th chapter, which we are seeing the cosmic form. And just to reacquaint, as we know, the battle was between the Pandavas, who represent the good forces, and the Kauravas, the evil forces. And Krishna and Arjuna are in the battle field. And this Bhagavad Gita is a dialogue between the student and the Lord. And then in the palace is sitting Dhritarashtra and Sanjay. Dhritarashtra is the father of the Kauravas, the evil cousins, and Sanjay is his minister. And Sanjay has the Divya Drishti, or a divine vision, where he can see what is happening in the battlefield, even though it was 20 plus miles away. Sitting in the palace, he could see it without the aid of television or telescope. Not only that, but he had another interesting skill just given to him for this war, not afterwards. He could also feel the feelings, what each of the characters is going through, the emotions were felt by him. And so far we have described the cosmic form of the Lord, where Arjuna asks Krishna to show him the divine form. He says, in the 10th chapter, he says, you are in everything. Like he said, among the animals, I am the lion, among the subjects, I am the king, among the mountains, I am Everest, among the birds, I am the Garuda. But how is the whole world in you? I want to see both. And so Krishna, in his infinite compassion, shows him the cosmic form, or the Virat Swarup. That's why the 11th chapter is so beautiful, because otherwise you'll say, okay, what is it? You know, you can finish in 5 minutes. Arjuna saw the form, over, okay, let's move on. But he said, just as if a thousand suns had arisen. Imagine how much the brilliance of that will be. He says, that is the brilliance of this form. It's like a thousand suns. But it's not the form that is blinding. If you look at thousand suns, you know, you won't be able to see anything. But it's a very soothing brilliance. It's like the brilliance of the moon. You know, you can keep watching nowadays. There's a full moon yesterday. And it's so soothing. It's just that kind of brilliance. So it's mind-boggling, you know. The 12th chapter, Sri Krishna says, rest your intellect in me. By resting the intellect means understand me in my depth. Think about me at all times. Remember me with love. Learn about me from a teacher. And keep your intellect on me. Use me in all your activities. Remember me as in everything you do. Nivasishyasi mayeva. You will live in me alone. You will reside in me alone. Ata urdvam na samshaya. There is no doubt. So that is the beauty of this chapter, that it tells us about this cosmic form and makes us see that there is one Lord everywhere. And we are all in his lap. Everything is in him. And that is the glory. So that is the way. That's why if you read this chapter again, you know, read it with that understanding and that feeling, and it will change your perception of this chapter. It's a very beautiful chapter. Anyway, so in the last week, we did the verse number 34 and 35, where the Lord tells Arjuna in the verse number 34 that all the warriors that are in the opposite camp, all the Kauravas, have already been destroyed by me. The time has already come. I am Kala. I am time, and everything is, so you are going to be victorious. The good side will win because the Lord is with them. So do not be worried. And then Sanjay then comes in and speaks. Sanjay then tells Dhritarashtra that listening to this, Arjuna's heart was filled with joy. He couldn't even speak. You know, his throat was choked and he was full of fear, but at the same time he was full of devotion. So he bowed down to the Lord. And then what did he say? So today we shall start the 36th verse. According to Gurudev, according to Swami Chinmayananda, these 8-9 verses from 36 to 44, he says there is no greater prayer in Hinduism. These 9 verses where the Lord has been praised. Not only that, but the Gurudev also said that nowhere in the world's literature, in such a compact form, you will find such a universal prayer which can be applied to any religion. It does not mention anything about religion or anything about Hinduism, it is such a universal adoration of the Lord that if these 9 verses, if you just understand and apply and practice them, that's all you need, because that is the best prayer. You do not need any other prayer. There is no better prayer. It's his, Swamiji's commentary is indeed wonderful. I'll try to do justice to that in my comments, but we'll do verse number 36. So remember this, that these 9 or 10 verses are very, very beautiful, and they're Arjuna's praise of the Lord. Having seen the cosmic form, having seen all the destruction that is going to happen, he's so grateful that, oh Lord, you are so infinite and you are so compassionate and merciful that at my request you did showed me all this. You know, how many people have the opportunity, which the Lord afterwards will say, nobody has had the privilege of seeing this that you have. So Arjuna Uvacha, verse number 36. Sthane Rishikesha tava prakirtya. Jagat prahrishyatyanurajyate cha. Rakshamsi bhitani disho dravanti. Sarve namasyanti cha siddha sanghaha. So Arjuna uvacha. Arjuna, even though his voice was choked and he was full of emotion after he was able to get his senses, he then speaks. He says, Sthane Rishikesh. Sthane means it is very appropriate. It is very right. Oh, just Rishikesh is one of the names of Krishna, has two different meanings. We'll talk about it. Rishikesh, O Lord. Tava Prakirtya, your glory. Prakirtya is your glory, your praise. Jagat Prahrishyati, the whole world, when it sees this glory and this wonderful form of yours, the Jagat Prahrishyati, the whole world gets happy, Anurajyate, and rejoicing. The whole world, the entire universe is rejoicing because you have appeared in this beautiful form. And what happens to the evil people? The evil Rakshas does not only mean evil, but those who are materialistic, who do not desire the Lord. Rakshamsi, Bhitani Disho Dravanti, they are Bhitani with fear. Disho Dravanti, they run in all directions, they fly in Disha, all directions. And Sarve Namasyanti, and all of the Siddha Sangaha, the Siddhas are these realized people or these sages, Siddha Sangha, the collection of them, Namasyanti, they prostrate, they bow down to you. So he says it is appropriate, Rishikesh. Rishikesh is Krishna's name, and Swamiji in his commentary interprets in two different ways. One is Rishikesha. Kesha means hair, Rishi means curly locked hair. So if you see, the Krishna had long curly hair, but for this battle, because he was the charioteer, you know, he was the chauffeur of Arjuna. At Arjuna's request, he had tied his hair. The idea being that in the middle of the battle, the one driving the chariot cannot have the hair come in his eyes, because the charioteer is not only driving, but he's taking evasive actions. All kinds of arrows and missiles are being fired. And so the charioteer is equally important as the warrior. So his hair has to be tied. Also implying that a person who is out to serve mankind should keep himself or herself ready. So keep your locks tied. It means that do not let any obstacle come. When I am going to serve others and serve mankind, then I should keep myself physically and mentally ready. So that is one meaning of Rishikesh, the one whose curly locks are tied. Another meaning Swamiji gives, he says Rishik Isha. So it's how you break the sandhi. One is Rishikesh or Rishik Isha. Isha means the Lord, Rishik means the senses. So he is the Lord of the senses. Implying the Lord of the senses, Rishik Isha. Isha means the Lord. So what it means is that it is the self or the consciousness, because within us there is the Lord himself, signified here by Om, who is the Lord of all the senses. The fact that my eyes can see, my ears can hear, my mouth can speak, my hands and feet can move, it is because of the presence of the Lord. So that is the implication that you are the Lord of all our sense organs, the organs of action. So all the abilities that I have, my ability to think, my ability to feel, my ability to act, all is dependent on you. As long as the consciousness is within us, is reflecting, we are able to walk and talk. Once the consciousness no longer identifies, then, you know, we are ready for the nearest mortuary. So that's why he says, Rishikesha, Tava Prakirtya, your glory, Jagat Prahrishyati, the whole universe enjoys, and the Rakshasas run away. There are many implications of these two lines, because we find that wherever the Lord appears, all evil disappears. And as we have seen, the Lord appeared in many times as Ram, as Krishna, as, you know, Mother Durga and all to remove evil, but also to establish good ideas. He appeared as Jesus, as Buddha, as Swami Chinmayananda, as Shankaracharya, to re-establish dharma, to re-establish the right values, the right knowledge. So wherever the Lord appears, the evil forces retreat and the forces of good are re-established. That's why he says, yada yada hi dharmasya. So wherever I am required, I appear again and again to re-establish dharma and to remove adharma. Also, internally, if you internalize this statement, whenever you chant the name of the Lord or think of the Lord's name with devotion, what happens? The good forces, the good feelings in your body get stronger and the evil thoughts go away, the ego disappears. That when you are chanting the Lord's name and remembering it with love, you cannot have arrogance or pride or greed or jealousy or hatred or, you know, looking down on others. That cannot be there. So automatically, the evil forces run away. And that's what, that is the glory of chanting of the name of the Lord. Swami Tejomayananda ji, who is the head of the mission, always preaches that. He says, just chant his name whenever you have an opportunity. Chant with love and chant with devotion. And that is the most powerful spiritual exercise. So we need to go towards the Lord and run away from evil. This reminds me of a very beautiful story. Muniji, who comes once a year to Bharti and Rashmi's house, some of you may have heard him, tells this beautiful story. He says that one time there was a smart aleck kind of a guy who was walking around and he wanted to have some fun. So he saw this pehlwan. So then this wise guy saw this pehlwan, this wrestler. You know, wrestlers are, because they spend so much time building up their body, you know, mentally they don't have time to develop very much. It's like the linebackers in football, you know, they are so muscular, but then they get repeatedly hit in the head. And so anyway, so this wrestler was very powerful, but was a little simple-minded, let's put it that way. And so this man wanted to have some fun with him. So it was, you know, the sun was rising. And the wrestler was standing. He was a big muscular guy and his shadow was long. So he says, Amrit Singh Ji, he asked him, he said, huh? He says, so where are you going? I'm just going for a walk. I'm going to go to the gym to build my muscles. So he says, you know this shadow of yours that is here? He says, yeah. He says, I hear you are a very fast runner. He says, nobody in this village, what only this village? 10 villages around. Das gaon mein koi, nobody can run like me. I am the fastest and the strongest. He says, okay, now your shadow is in front of you, right? He says, yeah. Let's see if you can catch it. Can you catch your shadow? So, yeah, that's no problem. I have caught all the biggest runners in this, you know, on the competition. Shadow is nothing. Okay, let me see. So this man starts running, trying to catch it. And the more he runs, the further the shadow. And he runs and runs and he just cannot catch it. And this man is having a great laugh and he sees this guy running away in the distance and he runs for miles and miles, you know, 1 hour, 2 hours. Finally, he's exhausted and I couldn't catch my shadow. And he's all out of breath and sits down all depressed. And then there comes this Mahatma, this wise person. He says, Amrit Singh Ji, why are you so unhappy? Why are you so stressed out and you look so tired and out of breath? He said, "Swamiji, I have been trying since morning to catch my shadow, but the shadow is faster than me. No matter how hard I try, the shadow runs ahead of me, and I cannot catch it." He said, "I'll tell you a very simple method." He says, How can I catch this shadow? I tried everything. I ran as fast." He says, "Just turn around. And now you are running away from the sun. Turn around and run towards the sun. And you will overtake your shadow. Your shadow will be behind you." He turned. He says, "Yeah, that's so wonderful." He was so happy. And so he started running to the sun, and the shadow was following him. And he said, "Oh, I beat my shadow." So he comes back to this wise guy and says, "See, I overtook my shadow." And he showed that he had won. Now, we are laughing at this story, but we are all exactly the same, like this Pahalwan. We are not any wiser. Because what we do is that we turn our back to the Lord, the sun, and we then run toward the world of objects, emotions, and thoughts. And just as the shadow has no reality, the world has no regularity. It's a changing world. Everything is changing. You love somebody and then that person doesn't love you anymore. You possess a position or power, and then, you know, you are the president of the United States, and then next year you're disgraced and forced to resign. You buy some new car, and then next month it gets wrecked. So you hold on to objects. Some friends, you know, they don't call you anymore to parties, and then you get depressed. So this world we hold on to, thinking that this world is going to give me joy. And the more you run after the world, the further away it runs. You cannot grab it. You cannot grasp it, because the world cannot be grasped by running after it, because our back is to the Lord. We said, "Lord, it's okay, you know, maybe afterwards." I read somewhere very beautiful. He says, "What is the difference between a wise person, a seeker, and an ordinary person?" He says, the wise person, you ask him, "When do you want realization?" He says, "I want it here and now." Wise person says, "I want it here and now." Seekers like us, or maybe not like us, but seekers who are true seekers, they say, "I want it as soon as possible." So we might say that, you know, "I want it as soon as possible." And then the one who is less, he says, "Okay, you know, retirement ke baad, after retirement, after age 65, or, you know, I have many lifetimes, you know, maybe in my next life or two lives from now I'll do." So we turn our back to the Lord and run towards the world of objects. And the world of objects can never be grasped, you know, never can be held in your hand. You can keep chasing all day. You will never get true happiness. Maybe for a while, a little money or a little power or some position or some friendship or some love. But then eventually it ends. So he says, keep running towards the world and you will be end up in disappointment like that wrestler. So how do I make the world my follower? Turn towards the Lord. Run towards the Lord and the whole world will follow you. Say, how can you say that? Well, look at Jesus. What did he have? He had nothing, right? All he had was held on to the Lord, and he had 10 followers. And now how many billion Christians are following him? Look at Buddha. Look at Swami Chinmayananda. How many hundreds of thousands of followers of the Chinmaya mission? There are 300 such centers. There are 300 such classes going on every Sunday morning, and some of them, here we have only 30 or 40, some have them 300 and 400 people. And here we have 150 Bal Vihars, some of the Bal Vihars have 2,000 students. So thousands of children and thousands of adults are benefiting, because one Swami Chinmayananda decided to pursue the Lord's path. One Shankaracharya, one Buddha, one Jesus, one Guru Nanak, that's all you need, one person, just to turn his or her attention to the Lord, and the whole world follows after them. 2,500 years after, Buddha is still worshipped. His statues are there in every major Buddhist temple in every country of the world. And what was he? He was nobody. He was just a king who left his kingdom and had 200 or 300 followers. So that is what they say, that Rakshamsi Bhitani Drisho Dravanti Jagat Prahrishyati. Turn your back to the Lord and you will suffer. Turn your face to the Lord and you will be happy. So that is what the glory of this beautiful verse is. And we see that in, happens in our life too, you know. Suppose on a Friday evening, they were announced, okay, Swamiji's classes, lecture is there. And then there is a party in town with music and DJ and dance and drinks and alcohol and food and all. Now, how many people will go to Swamiji's lectures and how many will go to the party? If you look at the number, that tells you that that is the way of the world. There are very few people who are on this spiritual path. Somebody asked Swami Tejomayanandaji, he says, Swamiji, how come only 200 people come to your lectures? In those days, and now of course several thousands come. But somebody asked Swamiji, how only 200? He said, I am surprised, 200 aate bhi kaise hain. I am surprised, how come even 200 come? Because this path is not easy. You know, the path of fun is very joyful. It's easy. Everybody can go. But that to come to my lecture, he says, is a wonder for me. So that is the beauty of these two lines, that when the Lord's name is in your heart, all goodness prevails and all evil runs away. And sarve namasyanti cha siddha sangaha. And the sages, the realized masters, they are neither happy nor unhappy. They are not affected. They are not joyful and sorrowful. They just bow in adoration. Because they have already realized the truth. They already know that they are one with, they have already become one with that Lord. And for them, this is just an appearance. It's just happening. It's okay. The world is enjoying it. And so they bow down in humble gratitude, adoration, but they neither get happy nor unhappy. They neither, and that is the hallmark of a realized master, that you and I, if something goes well, we start, oh, prahrishyati anurajyate, oh, we get so happy. And then when something sorrowful comes, we get all depressed and crying. But a wise person sees what has come will go, you know, jo aaya hai wo jayega. You know, the world is a place where things come and go, people come and go, situations change, happiness, unhappiness. Once you have become one with that immortal self, then you go beyond all joys and sorrows. Does not mean that the realized master becomes like a stone and he has no love and compassion. In fact, he has supreme love and compassion. That's why we find all these great masters traveled throughout the world, spreading their message, composing all these texts and giving us all this material. The last few years I have had the fortune not only to read Swami Chinmayananda's commentary, but I have listened to his tapes. And the tapes are available on tape and CD and all, where you can actually listen to him giving these discourses. And I have actually the entire set of Gita, 18 chapters. And when you listen to him, you feel you are in the presence of a realized soul. How clearly and knowledgeably, even in the book is there, but when you are listening to his powerful words, it brings a different feeling. So those of you who can should buy those sets, because that is the most wonderful. I think some of the people here have bought it. I know Komal, her husband gave it to her, Ajay Komal Desai, her husband gave it to her on her birthday. And she says that's the best gift she has had in all these years from her husband, because she listens to those CDs every day and you know, feels that she is in the presence of this master. So that is the glory of this the chanting of the Bhagavad Gita. Like I said, every verse is wonderful. You can talk for hours, but I would like all of you to comment on it or what you feel about. Well, there are many reasons. One is he was dark. You know, he was born dark. I mean, some people are fair, some people are dark. But also dark represents that it's not known to us. And when something is dark, you know, that means I don't know it, right? Like they say, oh, I'm in the darkness. That means I don't know. Or or algebra, I'm always in the dark. So when something is in the dark, that means you don't know it. That means you need to know it. So Krishna represents the self or the consciousness which is not known to us. Which is not known to us, but through understanding, through knowledge, we can become one with it. But you cannot know it as an object. So it always remains dark. But the idea being that it represents the ignorance that we have of the self. There's another story that there was a snake who used to very poisonous snake Kalia, who was harassing the villagers. They couldn't swim in the lake because this snake was a water snake. And nobody could go into the lake even to get water. And Krishna dived into that lake and he had a battle. He was a young boy. He battled with that snake, and it says the poison, because he bit him. So he became dark after that poisonous. But then the snake was, of course, not killed, but controlled, where he was, you know, enough controlled by Krishna with his power that he then became very humble and docile and didn't bother the rest of the villagers. And he just went away. Yeah, so that's another.
So Lord Krishna doesn't kill.
And it says in the which verse, you know, sir, you know, here it says all the weapons of the world he could see. Because he was seeing him at the time of war. So signifying that in the Lord of the universe, all the weapons are there, even the guns and the atomic bombs. Everything is there because of the grace of the Lord. Even the somebody could sit down and think about an atomic bomb or think about making a gun or a cannon. He had to have the energy from the consciousness. He had to have the light of consciousness. Now, if he uses that gun to kill somebody innocent, or uses the nuclear bomb to destroy innocent, you know, cities, then that's not the appropriate use. That same atomic power can be used to cure cancer. So you can use atomic power to cure cancer, or you can use atomic power to destroy a city. So the Lord has nothing to blame in that. He has given you the intelligence and the ability and the atomic power. It's how you use it. So signifying that all weapons are in him, all power is in him. Also, all the good things are in him. You can see all the blessings. You know, all the sages and the demons. The demons are in the Lord as much as the saints. You can see that. All the demons and the gods, all the good and the bad, the evil and the ugly, everything is within him. The dark and light. In the next verse, we'll talk a little more in detail. But good and bad, evil and everything is in him. Everything is sustained and supported by him. And even a robber, to commit a robbery, to plan a bank robbery, he needs the Lord's grace. In fact, we find in India that the robbers, like when they go to dacoits, when they go to murder and kill, they go to Mother Kali's temple and bow down and say, "Oh, Mother Kali, bless me so that I may catch a robber and kill him and steal his money." Now, Mother Kali's, she's not involved in his killing. You know, he goes for her blessing. She says, "Tathastu, you want my blessing? You want to go kill? Go ahead and kill. But then you will suffer the consequences of the karmas." So the Lord blesses all equally. He does not, it's not that he blesses the saint more than he blesses the criminal. He blesses them equally. And he says, "I have given you the ability, whether you use them as a saint or as a sinner, it's your choice." And the consequences of the karma will be there. You cannot escape. You cannot say, I use the Lord to kill, so I'm not. No, if you kill or hurt somebody, you will suffer the consequences. If you help somebody, you will be blessed. So the grace or the punishment does not come from the Lord, comes from your own actions. But he's there equal in all. It's not that he was more in Mahatma Gandhi than in Hitler. He was equally in both. Yeah, Shankh Chakra, because those are the Shankh Chakra Gada are representative of Narayana, the Vishnu. But Swami Chinmayananda gives a very beautiful description. Why? Flower, of course, represents auspiciousness. But the shank or the conch is the call, like in the temples, you know, they blow the conch saying that, everybody come to the temple. So the Lord is calling you with the conch to him, right? But if you don't listen and say, "Oh God, I don't have time for you, you know, I want to spend time in the world," then what will happen? He'll hit you on the head with a gada. That means you will get some sorrow in life. You know, when you chase after the world eventually will kick you. Like that story of that man. No matter how fast you run, the world will never ever give you permanent. One or the second day you will get killed, and then you will realize, "Oh God, I'm so sorry." Then you will turn back and then start saying, "Oh God, please help me. Why am I suffering? Why am I this? Why is my wife not? Why my husband, my boss, my neighbor, why my children don't love me anymore?" ultimately nobody will love you, whether it's your husband, your wife, your child, nobody will. He is the only one. So if you don't listen to the call, he will hit you with the gada. So to wake you up, hit you means not out of maliciousness, but to wake you up. Okay, wake up, my son. You have had enough of suffering. Now you come to me. But suppose you say, I don't care how much I suffer. I'm not going to give up the world. I'm going to hold on. And I'm not going to, he said, okay, then I'll cut your head with the chakra. With the chakra, he'll cut. That means that, okay, this life is finished. You, now next life again, now you can listen to the conch. So if other, ultimately, you know, if your whole life, if you spent in acquiring, possessing, you know, just cheating others and getting it, ultimately, you know, you will suffer and then you have to take another birth and then punarapi jananam, punarapi maranam, and then go through the same suffering all over again. So this represents conch, he is calling us. Gada is that is a gentle blow to the head. But if you don't listen, then you have to lose your head and get another birth and start this journey. So that's the significance of that. Swami Chinmayananda somewhere in his commentary had written it. So thank you. That's a good question. Whoever asked. Yeah, you did. Thanks. Yeah. So that's the significance of four hands. And Krishna was dark and his brother Balram was fair. And even though they were both born of the same mother, one son was dark and one was fair. But they both had the, they both are worshipful. They both, you know, Balram was also an incarnation of Sheshnag, of the, you know, from the heavens. So signifying that whether you're dark or fair doesn't matter. It's your qualities that determine. And they were both worshipful. They were both very nice. So it's not the skin color or not the appearance or not, but it is your qualities that decide whether you are divine or not. And they were both, I mean, he could have been fair and very beautiful, like Ram, when he appeared in his avatar, is very handsome. But he chose to take that form, even though Krishna was very beautiful. It's not that he was not beautiful, you can see. But he chose to take the dark form to signify that everybody is my creation. That's why all our gods and goddesses, they ride on different animals or birds. Like Shivji rides on a bull. And then Vishnu rides on a Garuda, on an eagle. And then Brahmaji rides on a swan, I think. And then Saraswati rides on a swan. And then Lakshmiji. So the idea being that all birds and animals are to be respected and revered and worshipped. We should not just slaughter them or kill them or torture them. The whole nature has to be preserved. So that was the idea. That's why all our Ganeshji has an elephant head. Mother Durga rides on a lion. Ganeshji has a mouse that he rides on. So signifying that whether it's a mouse or a lion or an eagle, or, you know, say, oh, this is a national bird, should be protected, but can we, then should we be killing all the other birds and chickens? You know, this is a national animal, or so we love dogs and cats. So that's okay. But then it's okay to kill cows and pigs and sheep and all. No, all animals, all birds, all beings are to be worshipped and to revered and respected. So that is the idea. That's why all our gods and goddesses rode on different animals, signifying that also. There's a lot of symbolism if you read about it.